You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
So my motivation behind the coming over and test my dogs on the NAVDA UT is that there had been very few wirehead leash dogs who had been run on the UT test before, and I was very disappointed about this fact. So I thought to myself that I'm trying to show an example to breeders that I'm coming over from Hungary and testing my dogs, and I'm trying to motivate some other wirehaired Vizsla owners to get out and test their dogs and prove the ability of this breed. If I had been able to go to the Invitational, then there had been 6 wirehaired Vizslas there, all from my kennel, but I was extremely happy that we had so many wirehaired Vizslas there, because previously there was basically none.
I was in Vegas for work this past weekend and had the opportunity to hook up with Lauren Stamm, a friend and guest of the podcast from episode 49 titled Outdoor Mama. She had just come from a duck hunt and we had a great time. I love this community of women who are so crazy sick for chasing birds and getting their kiddos outside and involved. Lauren, you are a rock star. Next time we get together, I hope it's chasing Chucker. I brought a few sample bags home from ProPlan's new Sport 3020 formula of salmon and cod for my crew, and they're absolutely loving it. There's also a 3020 beef and bison formula and a turkey, duck, and quail formula. ProPlan also now offers sensitive skin and stomach in turkey, which is pretty exciting. Just like the salmon and lamb sensitive skin and stomach, it's a 26% protein and 16% fat, which is a good maintenance formula. There's no corn, wheat, or soy, so it's a great option for those dogs with food sensitivities and uneasy stomachs. If you're a Patreon patron, be sure to check out the video I posted of Lee Chose with Boss Shot Shells and Hannah Leonard of Sporting Lead Free. We went through shotgun patterning, chokes, shot size, you name it. Super fun and informative content available only at patreon.com/thebirddogbabe. Lee even shares information on how to be one of the first to score ammo when it comes available. A friend texted me this week and she had road trip to Montana and was knocking birds out of the air with steel, but said that several didn't die. They'd run off or they'd fly away. So she wanted to know how she could get some Boss. She was at our women's grouse camp where everyone was shooting Boss, and she was able to see how effective at killing they were. There's no need to be crippling birds out there with steel shot anymore. Go to BossShotShells.com and get yourself some copper-plated bismuth. And while you can shoot Boss through any shotgun, yep, even your grandmother's hand-me-down, I prefer my Siren 20-gauge Tempiolite, a.k.a. the Grouse Slayer. Yeah, she has a name, and she's earned it. To have a shotgun that actually fits the majority of women right out of the box is freaking amazing. If you haven't had a chance to at least try one out at a demo center or shooting event, be sure to do so. Go to SirenUSA.com to find an event or demo center near you. Dakota 283. So I was walking out of Costco yesterday and I see this guy standing behind my truck, peering around both sides. And to be honest, this is kind of common. So I said, pretty sweet rig, right? I have two Dakota 283 G3 kennels on top of a deck system, enclosed with a Leitner ACS Forge cargo system, topped with an eye camper. It's pretty much the ultimate DIY on the hunter setup. He asked if Dakota had more color options besides purple. So for those of you that not only want safe, unparalleled protection for your dog's travel, but also have a color preference, yes, they do come in blue, 2 different shades of granite, olive, orange, pink, and sandstone. And when you order, be sure to use the promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. I had some audio issues with the recording of this episode, and I am honestly on day 2 of editing to clean it up the best I could. But apparently, the internet connection from Montana to Hungary isn't awesome. and I discovered my headset was broken, so I had to record with my AirPods. But I promise that this episode is fantastic and worth the bit of audio compromise. My guest today is Zofia Mietzek. Zofia is the breeder of the world-known Zoldmali wire-haired Vizslas. She's also an FCI judge and arguably the most accomplished female dog trainer in Hungary. We discuss her journey in the breed for the past 22 years, training, hunting, and testing her dogs in several countries, breed characteristics, and the growing popularity of the wire-haired Vizsla. All right, let's get after it.
Let's keep rolling with this, Sophie. If you could introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. So I am Zofia Mietzek. I live in Hungary, and I am a wire-haired Hungarian Vizsla breeder, also a hunting dog trainer and the FCI performance judge. So meaning that I'm judging hunting dog events. But I have to say that part I do less because I mostly handle my dogs on several types of work events, and I'm more interested in handling them than judging other people's dogs. So I've gotten into this breed when I was pretty young, 16, and in my life everything happens for a reason. It seems that my mission is to get this breed better and more known, and my whole life is around the wire-haired Vizsla.
Yeah, no, and I guess, Zofia, can you tell us how you said you got your first one when you were 16? How did that come about? Did your parents get that for you? What would that look like?
So I am coming from a family of no dogs. Nobody was a dog person. Nobody was a hunter. Nobody was interested in having dogs. Actually, my mother was afraid of dogs, and it was a very long fight with my family that they finally allowed me to have a dog. And this is especially interesting because I am quite a crazy dog lady, let's put it that way. So that's interesting, knowing where I'm coming from, that we have no hunting background and no background that would support this this kind of interest. So actually, as I've said, everything happens for a reason. I had a friend who was a falconer, and the choice of this breed was really accidental. Actually, the first dog I ever had was a beagle that was sadly hit by a car when it was 2 years old. But if it wasn't hit by a car, then I couldn't have chosen the breed that I really wanted to have. Well, after my beagle, I decided I'm never, ever going to have a beagle again, and not a male dog ever, because it was a male. That changed later, because now my favorite dog is a male dog. And funny enough, those who know me well know that for several years I was really disliking male dogs, but my beagle helped me in that a lot, because that dog was like a true male, a true stubborn beagle, not thinking of anything, just what to pee and whom to shag. So that was his life. And I really loved that dog, and I was very sad when this accident happened, but that was meant to happen, so I could really get on the track that I was supposed to get on. And the reason why I chose this breed is because this falconer friend of mine, well, actually we were sitting at home brainstorming what breed should I get, because finally I could choose the breed I wanted. Let me comment here that the reason I got the beagle is because one time my mother said that if we're ever going to have a dog, it should be a beagle, because that's what she likes. So I was, you know, I didn't mind whatever dog I get. I just wanted a dog. That's why we ended up with the beagle. And then this friend told me that he thinks the wire-haired Vizsla breed is the best breed, and I should get one. And actually, I've never even seen one in my life before. but I really like the short-haired Vizsla. What I didn't like about them is the fact that, well, in Hungary, we could find one in every corner, and they were really varying in size, in shape, in everything, and they were known to be very hyper and nervous dogs. Mm-hmm. And so the wire-haired Vizsla was something very unique, also very difficult to find. So I decided, okay, I want to have a wire-haired Vizsla, and I want to have a female after my male beagle. And interestingly, when I decided this, and at that point I've only seen a wire-haired Vizsla on a pictures. Mm-hmm. A friend of ours called us on a phone, and she told me that she has found the wire-haired Vizsla female running on the streets. She didn't even know that our beagle has a pest. And she asked what she should do with this dog, because she knew that I am crazy about dogs. So she was hoping I can help find the home for this, find the owners of this dog. But I couldn't believe my ears that she actually says she has found the wire-haired Vizsla female, and I just decided I wanted one. So she brought this dog over to us, and this dog was living with us for almost 2 months until we found the owner, because it turned out that this dog, that the owner of this dog was living really far away. This dog just jumped out of a moving car's window when driving to a dog show. And the owner of this dog was so happy that I found his dog that he said he's going to buy me a puppy. That was when I could really decide what or where is my dog going to come from. But at that point, I had no intention of hunting or breeding. I had no idea about hunting. I just wanted to have a dog that I can love. And so I basically looked up all the advertisements, and there were so few because this breed was so unknown and actually really difficult to sell because nobody knew it and nobody wanted it. Actually, there was big problem with the coat quality and also the gene pool was so narrow that it was really a gamble what you are going to end up with, and you couldn't really choose among good dogs. So basically there was just one advertisement that had puppies, so I called them and I asked how old the puppies were. They said they were 4 weeks, and then I asked what is the soonest I could take the puppy home, and they said 6 weeks. So we were sharp there, and I took my puppy home. Wow. And then this dog actually ended up being the top Hungarian Vizsla in Hungary for 3 years, in three consecutive years in show and work as well.
Wow.
But in between, I have to say, so I actually just bought this dog as a pet. But then this falconer friend of mine who was inspiring me to get this breed, he was giving me a book about how to train your hunting dog. I need to tell here that I always had very good skills training dogs, and a very good, I could feel the dogs. I would really compare myself to Cesar Millan, even though mm-hmm. we don't have a TV and I have only watched a few of his episodes. But when I saw what he's doing or how he's doing, and so far what I've read from him, it really sounds very similar to my staff, that he is just feeling what to do and how to do. And
sure.
You know, certain people are just born with that.
Right, that you can read the dogs so well.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Right. So because when I tell this story, a lot of people ask me, so you read this book and then you just knew how to train your dog for hunting? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, partly, but you really have to that special ability to train and understand dogs. So basically this book that was written in Hungarian before anybody would ask the title.
Yes, I was just going to.
So don't ask.
And there's and no English version, huh?
Yeah, no, there isn't.
Well, maybe you can do that for us.
Oh, no way. No time. So this book was actually just good for awakening me what this breed is good for, because before that I had no idea that a Vizsla is supposed to hunt and what tasks it is bred for. So I was reading the book. This book also had stories of different hunting dogs or pointing dogs, you know, how they were hunting or how they are used in hunts. So it was very good for me to actually learn what this breed is capable of, or any other versatile hunting dogs. And then also there was a lot of training method. I mean, one training method, but how you train this and that and how you get this and there. And I was just reading the book and then started to train my dog based on the book. And it was just a lot of fun and success, because everything that was written in the book, you know, you teach this like that, and I was doing it and the dog did that. So I was extremely motivated and I really enjoyed this new world of hunting dogs. And the only difficulty I had is that I was living in Budapest, so the capital of Hungary, not downtown, but I had to at least travel half an hour to the fields. I didn't have any access to that game or live game apart from the wild ones we find. So training my dog for me took way longer there than for those who had all the equipment and access to game. I didn't give up, and every day after school I went straight to the field to train my dog. And then I took her to her first test, an NA, and she got maximum score. I was, of course, very proud of her. And then I saw that there is the next level, which I would compare to the NAVDA UT. But, well, officially it's called the ÖTV, which is the same as the German HZP. You might be familiar as you have Drahthars. So actually, it's the same. We have the same or very similar testing system. The only difference is that in Hungary, the ÖTV, which is, as I've said, same, very similar to the HZP, we don't have any age limit. So the dog can do it at any age, but it is a bit more stricter judged. So I believe, because in Germany, the HZP is a breeding requirement for the Drahthars. They are not judging it that strict, so that, you know, not so many dogs fail. And here in Hungary, because it is not a breeding requirement, just an additional thing, and that makes a dog even more extra or more special. That's why they are taking it way more strict. Better said, I would say that in Hungary, we have the Hungarian Vizsla Club and the German Pointing Dog Club. And in the German point, so also for the German pointing dogs, the Drahthars and the Hursa, or you would say the GSP, the breeding requirement is still this ÖTV, or in German, the HZP. And when you test there, actually only the German breeds can test in their clubs, but it's a lower level, or not so strictly judged, because what I've just mentioned, the reason. But if you test it with the Hungarian Vizsla Club, then it is more strict, because it is not necessarily needed for breeding. It is just some additional test and makes the dog more special.
Right, so and anyways, to prove its prove its ability. So do you use that in your personal breeding program? Do you take them through that test before you breed them, or when exactly, yes, or how do you use that for yourself?
So we don't just have tests, but we also have competitions. So that makes our life even more excited and more busy, because mm-hmm. testing the our dog's life or testing life doesn't stop by this test. It's just the beginning, and then you can keep on going to competitions and competitions. So yes, for me, the minimum I would do with the dog is either this ÖTV or actually we have a spring version, because this can only be done in autumn because of the live duck. We can only shoot the live duck in autumn. So there is also a spring version where they are not using live duck, but dead duck. And you have to get the dog search and find this dead duck on the water. But in other parts of the test, it is more difficult. For example, there is a double blind retrieve on the field instead of a single bird retrieve. The tracking part, we always have two tracks. So we have a hair and a feather track. And then it's a bit longer with the spring version of this, the test. So I'm either doing this or that or both of them. And then, I used to compete a lot with my dogs, also in Hungary as well as in other parts of Europe. But now I have a one-year-old son, and I'm still competing, but I like to spend my time with my son as well. So
yeah.
Now I'm less crazy about competition and even though my young dogs are still really good and they would be very successful dogs in competition, I'm downsizing my competition or the time I spend on competitions, because I have a family now. And
yeah. I've never thought that I'm going to. Do you take him with you?
Well, I do take him training several times, and we do take him to some of the competitions. But the fact is that now that he is 13 months, we can hardly keep his ear protector on, because sure. he can take it off really easy.
Yeah.
So I find it a bit more dangerous for him to be there, because yeah. I don't want him to listen to gunshots too much. So we did take him when he was a bit younger, and we are going to take him later as well. But at this time, it's only under certain circumstances when I can take him, because I can't explain him why he needs to have the ear protection on his ears. So,
yeah. You know what I find that works really well for that, Sophie, is giving them suckers. And, you know, of course, when he gets to like the Tootsie Roll or the gum, then take it away, switch it out for another one. But for some reason, I have had the best luck with giving the kids suckers to keep their ear protection on. but if you're carrying them on your back and, you know, in one of the packs, then you get sticky sucker in your hair. So you do have that drawback. But
so, yeah, my problem is if I carry him on the on my back, and that's how I have to carry him because he's really heavy now. Yeah. I don't see if he removes the ear protector.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm fine with adjusting it back every half a minute or so. But if I'm not aware that he removed it, then it's really not good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and next year, you know, when he's about 2 years old, what worked for my daughter last year when she was two is when I told her, mommy can't shoot the birds unless you have ear protection on. And she always loved to kind of have that reward of holding the birds too. So, you know, just like the dogs do, she enjoyed that. So that seemed to work too. So a couple tips
I'll
for you
to, yeah, thank you.
To mom and train and test.
Yeah.
But, so you travel quite a bit, and I know like you personally had two dogs qualified for the NABDA Invitational this year, and you weren't able to come over due to the border being closed, right?
Yeah, that was a very disappointing
for sure.
fact. actually.
Yeah. So where did you go to qualify them for that? Where did you test?
So we went to the to New Jersey in 2019 in May to test these two dogs. Well, I'm not 100% sure of the chapter's name. I don't want to say something stupid, but it was probably the Del something.
Delvel.
Delvel. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know that my mission is to get this breed known and to prove that this breed is just as good as other pointing dog breeds. And when I started competing with my very first dog when I was 18, I started to win several competitions with her, and I ended up making her a Hungarian and a Slovakian and a Czech and an international work champion. So that's a pretty big achievement. And then people started to tell me that, yes, you were lucky. This dog is very special. You're not going to have a better dog. I mean, yeah, ever after. Appreciate this dog. And I just felt, you know, you are not right. The breed itself is very good. And I want to prove the world this. And also, I was a bit disappointed that I felt that the breeders in this breed did not do a very good job promoting the breed. And it was only myself who was participating on these work events. And that's why they thought that, okay, I am just lucky and I just have a good dog, but all the others are shit. So that's actually the reason why I got into breeding, because I thought that I want to show the other breeders that they should do it better and there is a better way. And so my first own bred dog, who was called Zeldmali Alma, Alma means apple, by the way. She was at her time the very top wirehaired Vizsla in the world in what she has achieved. So her mom was the first wirehaired Vizsla I had. And then Alma was just even out winning, or how to say, even better than her mom, winning everything. And then her offsprings just kept on winning and winning. And after several years, people just saw that, yes, this breed is good. And by now we can see a very big interest overall in the world in this breed, because sure, it has shown in several countries and in the world that it's a good one. Let me just say that we have competitions in Hungary where there are several. The ratio is basically very similar always, that we have way more of other breeds than the wirehaired Vizsla. It's mostly my dogs competing. Unfortunately, there are still very few breeders who are interested in testing and competing with their dogs, even in Hungary, even though it's a Hungarian breed. So it is still a bit sad for myself. But my dogs are very often winning or are in the very first three place. I mean, between one and three. For example, there is a European Cup, a field trial European Cup only for Hungarian Vizslas every year in a different country organized. And every country can make a team of five dogs. So those five dogs are selected based on achievement and then selection trials. And the countries can run a team of five short hairs and five wire hairs, or a mix of five short and wire hairs. And I am running my own dog, so I always have a team of five Zeldmalis. That's our team. and we have been always winning or being second in the field trial European Cup. So that actually shows a lot, that I am basically picking out five dogs from my garden and take it to the European Cup and we win, while other countries are trying to select their very best Hungarian Vizslas and we beat them. What I'm very proud of is that we are competing. So me and my partner, Laszlo, We are competing in both field trials and versatile hunting competitions. Though, so the versatile, I know in America, the invitational is considered the versatile. In Europe, the field, water, and forest tests or competitions are considered the versatile competitions. So where the dog has to do a test in the field, the water, and in the forest, they have to do the blood tracking, the fox tracking, the retrieving the fox and hare from the track and the fox box. I believe that is what really means the dog is versatile when it is achieving great results in all these aspects. At least in Europe, they say that a dog can be either good in field trial or in a versatile testing system, because the fact that you are teaching your dog working out blood tracks that are, let's say, 8, 16 or 24 hours old, you are really making the dog to put the nose down and a bit different style of nose usage or search. And in our European field trials, it's not just about the pointing and the behavior around the bird, but a very major part of the competition or the grading is about the style of running. So the dog has to run with a high nose. That they say the higher nose, the better, and they look how the dog is using the wind, how wide it is running, and how systematic it is. Again, I've been on American field trials, the ones where they ran on horseback, and it was a very exciting experience, but it was very, very different from the European field trials.
Would you want your dogs running kind of that big and in those manners, the same kind of bird manners?
You mean as expected in the American field trial?
Yes.
Or just
yep.
For me, the American field trial was interesting, very different from what we are doing. For me, it was a bit too artificial about the bird. So those quails, at least where I had been, actually in all my American testing experience, it was interesting to see that these birds that are being planted, they are really not moving anywhere or
sure.
very little move.
Yep.
So actually, that's why I believe that in America, they expect the dog to the way they expect the dog to point and stand there, versus in Europe, they expect the dog to point and then stalk up to the bird and then flush the bird on command. So our system is very different. So we expect the dog to creep up, not totally to the bird. The dog always has to keep that distance when the bird is not flushed, only flushed on command, or when the handler is by the side of the dog. But we are not even allowed to overtake the dog and flush the bird ourselves. So, and then in America, it is just the opposite. So when I was testing with Navda, it was actually a very serious booting of my dogs do something totally opposite than what they had been taught before. And the reason why we expect this is because when our birds are planted on the field, they are moving way more. So the dog, they won't be sitting. And if a bird is walking or running, the dog actually has to keep in contact with the bird and keep that distance, not to flush the bird, only on command, but not to let the bird go away or go out of contact. Versus in America, what I've seen is that where they put the bird stays there. So the dog doesn't really have to work with the moving bird, or in an unfortunate situation when the bird is moving, that's where the dog is most likely going to make a mistake and fail. So our system is a bit different, and help me where I get here, how I got here, because I forgot.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm wondering, because you brought, how many dogs did you bring over to that utility test when you qualified?
Yeah, I brought over 2 of my dogs. Actually, that's okay. The maximum you can take on a plane.
Okay, sure. So you brought them over. Yeah, did you come over quite a bit earlier before the test to see what some of the differences were and how, and you know, prepare your dogs differently, or did you come over and just test right away?
Yeah, no, I came over a week before. Actually, I tried to come to America like once a year. Well, during COVID time, it didn't work out, but I'm trying to organize trainings for my Zoldmali owners in different parts of America, helping wow. them to train their dogs for hunting.
Sure.
So it was a good opportunity to organize a training in New Jersey. And also my friend, Emery Merzich, who also has one of my dogs and who now gained a VC with his dog on the Invitational. He helped me organize all this to get allowance to work on those fields that NAVDA is using. They were really good fields. We could get access to birds, and it really worked out perfect. So I arrived about a week earlier, and I was actually attending NAVDA training day the weekend before. That helped me a lot to see how things are done there. But of course, I already heard some stuff from Emery and how it's done, but it's more difficult to understand without seeing it. So it was a good experience seeing how it is done.
At this year's Invitational, there were there 4 Zoldmali Vishas?
Yes.
Okay.
So my motivation behind the coming over and test my dogs on the NAVDA UT was that there had been very few wire-haired Vizslas who had been run on the UT test before, and I was very disappointed about this fact. So I thought to myself that I'm trying to show an example to breeders that I'm coming over from Hungary and testing my dogs, and I'm trying to motivate some other wire-haired Vizsla owners to get out and test their dogs and prove the ability of this breed. And back then, when I did this UT, I think only Emery had his female have the UT done in first prize. But after that, I had 3 other wire-haired Vizslas, well, all of them were Zoldmalis, that passed the UT in first prize. So if I had been able to go to the Invitational, then there had been 6 wire-haired Vizslas there, all from my kennel. But I was extremely happy that we had so many wire-haired Vizslas there, because previously there was basically none, or maybe 2 years ago there was maybe 1, but that one, well, there were 2, and I think both of them failed. One of them was Emery's dog, so he tried it again this year, and now he succeeded.
Excellent. Yeah, so how many NAVDA Versatile Champion Zoldmali wire-haired Vizslas are there?
So far there are 3.
Okay.
I could say only 3 or already 3. I'm extremely proud of all of them who passed it, and I was actually preparing my own dogs for the Invitational as well, and till the very last moment I was hoping I can get out. So while I was training my dogs, I could see that it is very serious work put into these dogs, and it's not an easy test to do.
Right.
So everybody who is there and doing and participating, it's a big accomplishment already, and then you also need a bit of a luck that your dog is really performing well on that day. And one of them basically failed on the most easy exercise. We've never even thought that she wouldn't do that well because she had never had an issue with that. And that was the steadiness by blind. So sure. She did everything perfect. And then at the steadiness by blind, another short hair Vizsla was doing the retrieve. And then she wasn't even moving when the other dog was going out, but she stood up when the other dog was coming in. So it was a very weird situation, totally unexpected. You have to know that the white haired Vizsla, they are very cooperating, easy to train breed, and putting that kind of obedience is in them is not difficult. So this mm-hmm. exercise for the Vizsla is not a difficult exercise. It might be more difficult for a German breed who is more jealous and more excited when another dog is working. But I believe the wire-haired Vizsla breed has in general, a very good switch on and switch off button. So they can get really calm and accepting when it's not their turn. So it was actually a very unlucky moment that the right. dog just failed in this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crushing, isn't it? All that goes into it. And then some
random. Yeah, I felt so random... sorry for the owner.
Sure. Yeah, no kidding. So are you able to, is the NAVDA organization allowing you to come test next year then without having to requalify?
Yeah, so NAVDA had been really supportive and helpful. And we tried actually every way how to get out. I actually even contacted the American embassy here. And even NAVDA wrote them a letter, but unfortunately, still, it couldn't work. What was very odd is that the borders were closed for the EU, but it wasn't closed for countries that were way more south in Balkan, let's say Turkey and Croatia and Serbia and Romania. So people from there could travel, but not from the EU. Which is very odd because the COVID cases there were not better than here. So I just sense that it's more a political decision than anything logic behind it. And I even tried to look into options to go to Serbia and then fly over from there, but there were actually no direct flight to the USA, which would have taken my dogs. So if the flight was going through Europe, I mean, with the connection, then again, it wouldn't have worked out. So it was, mm-hmm. I was just basically looking into every possibility and it was not possible. And yes, NAVDA was very generous and they offered me that I can run next year.
Fantastic.
In New Mexico. But well, the problem is at this point, I'm not very hopeful in this because as far as I've seen, there is no way I can travel with my two dogs out there anywhere close. So traveling from Europe to America with two grown-up dogs is not very easy because mm-hmm. only certain flights are taking dogs. And there is no airport around there where I could get there with my dogs. And I don't think I have that extra motivation to fly in a very different location and then drive another, let's say, 12 hours to the location. That would be just too much. So
right, yeah, you'd almost have to like fly into Chicago and then drive down, and that
so you know mm-hmm. that's just a bit too much. I mean, even the trip there, and not even just financially and time wise, but dragging the dogs you know, for several days to get to the testing location, and then having two tired and exhausted dogs that will not perform just because of this lengthy journey, plus mm-hmm. the fact that they are actually much older by now, or by next year they will be much older than I would prefer to test them. And it's not because they can't. My male would be 7 by then, almost in his veteran years. I'm sure he could do that, but I'm just less motivated to do that again. And
let's talk a little bit about the breed in general, because as you said, you know, it's a rare breed. I know AKC recognized it here. Was it 2 or 3 years ago? Do you know?
No, I think it was at least like 5 years ago.
Oh, has it been that long already? Okay.
I think so, because I remember I was going to the first Westminster when the breed was recognized, and it was at least 5 years ago.
Okay. I was there too. That's how I found out they were recognized. I was riding the shuttle bus over for work, and the wire-haired Vizsla was sitting on the shuttle bus with me. So that was very likely
one of my dogs.
Well, it was a very beautiful one, and I think it ended up winning breed that day. So was that yours?
Actually, the first 2 years it was my dog's winning. It was Izzy the first year, and then the next year it was Falco coming from Canada.
Awesome.
So even though for me work is the most important part of achievement for this breed, mm-hmm. I do aim to breed dual purpose dogs. So showing that a beautiful dog can work as well, and the other way around, a good working dog can be also very beautiful. It's very important for me. So I'm only breeding from dogs who have proven themselves in the showing as well. And several of my puppies are also going to show homes. So not only to working homes, but also mm-hmm. to show homes. And also as pets, family companions and therapy dogs. I even have dogs who are epilepsy, seizure alert. It's a very versatile breed, not just in the hunting area, mm-hmm. but also in the everydays. And that's why it's also gaining such a big popularity, which is not necessarily going to be good for the breed in the long run. But coming from back over more than 20 years ago, this breed had such a narrow gene pool that it was really difficult to build up a good breeding stock. And by now we have more and more dogs to reach out to. So that is at least something positive.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you for that, for keeping the breed with form and function. I know that you use the terms beautiful, but it's more than that. When you put them in the show ring, it's proper structure. And when they have that, they're able to last longer in the field because they're built correctly. You know, dogs with a very upright shoulder or straight angled rear, they're going to break down and be more prone to injuries. In addition to that, with your breed specifically, the wire-haired Vizsla, is having a correct coat is very important. I think here in the US, at least in my breed, it's not as appreciated as it should be for the dogs in the show ring. You know, more are rewarded for having 3 inches of hairsprayed coat. And I hope that your breed never gets to that. But having a proper harsh coat is very important to the purpose of the breed.
I know several people who started to breed and then got out of it because it was more difficult and disappointing than what they expected. I would say that luckily in Hungary and in Europe, the dog shows are less about the spraying, as you would say, and
yes,
the grooming. Yes. We do probably in Hungary. Many of us are, I am, including me, I'm very lazy in grooming, so I'm not grooming my dogs too much, and still they can win. And several of our of the other competitors are not over grooming dogs, good quality, and the judges know what to look for. I mean, even a well groomed dog that has otherwise a poor coat quality, softer coat, it's not going to win, especially not with a Hungarian judge, because they know what the coat texture should look like. Mm-hmm. And also I find it lucky here that we are less driven by handlers. So it's mostly owners who are handling the dogs on shows. I think I could say this in general in Europe about this breed. Unfortunately, the handlers are getting more and more involved in the showing in every other breed, and certain breeders also hire handlers for this breed as well, but luckily still very few of the breeders or owners do that, because I believe when at that point when a handler steps in the ring, it's not necessarily going to be a fair competition anymore. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you know that how it works.
Yes,
in America.
So, I do. Yeah, it's a piece of the game, isn't it? It's become that rather than, I think, more of the appreciation of the dogs. But I mean, I know a lot of people that just aren't comfortable handling their dog in the show ring and just can't do their dog justice either. So it's nice that they have that option. But so let's talk about your breed more in specifics for people that may be interested or that have never heard of the breed. And let's start out with the size of males versus females.
So I would start with that in Hungary, the short hair Vizsla is much bigger than in America. Officially, the white hair Vizsla should have the same size as the short hair Vizsla in centimeter or inches. Just sometimes they tend to be more stocky or robust or more stronger bone. We have centimeter, but I've tried to convert it into inches. So the males are between 22.8 to 25.2 inches. The females are 29.2 to 23.6 inches. And there is a 0.8 inch allowance plus minus. So there is a bigger variation in the size and weight as well. They are supposed to be athletic and well-muscled dogs. From their temperament, mm-hmm. I would say they are, compared to the short hair Vizsla, they are more laid back and more easy to live with in the everydays. They are less hyper and less nervous. And they make great family companions. So they have patient with children, with other dogs and with people. They are very friendly. I myself have more male dogs and I can keep them together. Even when females are in heat, they don't fight and they get on well with each other. I have now about 18 dogs and I can have them together even in the car, like within one crate. I have big crates in a van and I put like 5-6 dogs together and they don't fight.
They do good. Wow.
Yeah. So that makes them very easy to keep. And I never have to pay real attention to who is going to be put together with whom, because they get on well, quite well. I'm not saying there are all of them are always very friendly and calm, because there can be sometimes some growling and especially young ones who are growing up, they are trying to climb further up on the hierarchy ladder, but I never let them fight or growl at each other, so they have to deal with this without me noticing it. That's the rule.
How are they on fur game, like when I take my white hairs out hunting, if they come across a raccoon or a coyote or something? I mean, they're more than happy to just go take out that furred animal and just as much as they would finding a bird. Whereas like my Broncos are like, no big deal, I'm just gonna leave that go. So like what would the wire hair Vizslas like in that kind of situation?
So I would say they are not at all that sharp as the German breeds. There are a few of them who would be sharp, but most of them would avoid the killing a cat or a fox. We don't have raccoons and we don't have a coyote. We have jackals, but I would be surprised if any of them would kill a jackal. So they are not aggressive in this sense, but many of them would pull down a wounded deer if it's in a pursuit. So let me tell you a story with Extreme, who also was supposed to go to the Invitational. He's one of my favorite dog and a very first in the breed, and the very first, I believe, in overall pointing dogs, being an international field trial champion and an international versatile champion. Something, to my knowledge, no other dog owns these two titles together, because it's very rare that a dog can be so successful in field trial and in these versatile competitions as well. So anyways, I never let him chase deers. So he's very steady with deers, especially because of the competitions. And then the first time we took him out on a deer tracking, but it was a wounded deer where the leg was shot. And I put the Bringsley on him. The Bringsley is actually a leather upward, a leather thing that is I put on the collar.
Okay.
And so I start the dog on a long leash when I start the blood tracking. And then when we get to an area where it's more difficult to follow the dog with the leash in my hand, or where I sense that we might get close to the game and the game might be wounded, so the dog would have to act quick and start to chase the deer, then I take the leash off and I put this Bringsley on the collar, and once the dog finds the deer dead, it puts the Bringsley in the mouth and comes back to me. This is what shows me that he has found the deer or whatever he was looking for. And then he leads me back to the dead deer. So in the very first time when he was searching for a shot wounded deer and it wasn't dead, I put the Bringsley on his collar and I let him go. And then the deer jumped up in front of him and he immediately grabbed the neck of the deer and then just pulled the deer down and killed the deer. And it was just amazing for me to see how great a problem solving the dog has, because it has never been let to chase a deer. And he just knew by from gut feeling that, you know, this deer is wounded and he just has to act something. And even he was never allowed to chase. This is now time to catch the deer.
Yeah.
So it just proved me again this great intelligence and high cooperation of the breed. And what was even more interesting or a nice experience for me is that when we got to the deer and him, and then when we told him to release the deer, he released it immediately. Where I know from experience that if you would ask a German breed to do that, it would have a hard time.
They'd be a bit hesitant, wouldn't they?
Yeah. But yeah. One other time, it was interesting that we were hunting for pheasant, and this same dog, Extreme, he started to point in the reeds, and then he was acting very strange, and he was kind of scared and got out of the reeds. He was still telling me that something is in there, but he's not going to go there. And it turned out that there was a wild boar there. So he knew by instinct that it's something that can kill him. I know that a German breed would never hesitate to go after a wild boar, and there is a big chance that he would be injured and he wouldn't dare, but the white-haired Vizsla is more cautious. So yeah, not so sharp.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. What about living with them? Do they do okay living in a kennel, or do they need to be house dogs? What's your opinion on that?
So I prefer placing my dogs to house dogs. I myself do not keep my dogs in kennels. They are in rotation, let into the house for every night. And then the rest have their own house with the beds and everything. And they do well outside during the day. And I'm sure because they can't talk, they can't complain about the kennel, but they are so good family companions that I prefer those homes where they are family members as well. But if we are just looking into facts, if you put this dog in a kennel, it would very likely accept it. And it's more quiet in general than the German breeds. We do tend to have German pointing dogs, the short hairs and white hairs as well here for boarding or training. And those ones are way noisy than the white haired Vizsla. Well, I don't let any of my dogs bark, so they are very quiet. But something I noticed, and I'm not sure if it's it applies to all the pointing dogs breeds or just the Vizsla, I'm sure it's same with the short hair and the white hairs, is that when they are young and you try to put them into a crate or a kennel, they are going to be very noisy about that and very crying, whining, and kind of separation anxiety.
Yes, what you see
there, but they do grow out of it. So I myself don't even try to put my puppies into crates when they are young. I wait till a certain age, let's say 4 or 5 months, and then they accept it totally easy. But if I start at 8-10 weeks, it's just a hard battle. So if somebody can do that and avoid that in the very beginning, then I advise to just avoid it and start later.
So I have to ask then, because I mean, crate training when you get them at 8 weeks is so convenient for potty training. So if you're not crate training them, how are you going about potty training?
So, my facility is quite comfortable in this way for me, because my puppies have an inside-outside facility and with a doggy door, so they can be in and out, and then they learn very quick to go out to pee and poo. Mm-hmm. And usually when the owners take them home, they are very pleased, and they say that the dogs learn very quick, if not immediately, to go out. But I believe that also depends on the owner, if the owner is really alert and knows when to take the dog out. So, you know, every time the dog wakes up or is after a big play or after eating, if the owner takes the dog out, then it's going to work well. I've experienced is that I actually have a crate in my working room. And if you put the puppy there and you are near the puppy, then it works better than if the puppy is left alone. So I myself do not need to keep them inside. I can leave them outside until they grow old enough to take it to be inside. And another thing that works well, if I put two puppies together, then they get calmer, or even better, an adult dog and the puppy. That helps much quicker to teach the puppy to accept the crate. But as I've said, I am not in need of putting them into crates. So I do understand that there are certain homes who do need to put them in crate. So it's just that's why I said it's just an advice. If you can do not put it in crate too soon. Yeah. Only start later, because it's just going to be easier.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Depending on what the setup is. So we talked a little bit about the importance of coat in your breed. Like with wire hairs, when they're 8 weeks old, you know, 6 to 8 weeks old, you can tell if they're going to have a good coat or not. Is that comparable to what you can determine in your breed?
Yeah, so I would say with my 20-something years of experience, I am quite accurate of what to expect as a coat, but still I can't tell if the dog is going to have a big beard or not. So I can tell if the coat texture is going to be more or less good or not, but there can still be surprises. So, for example, in my kennel, the dog who has the most beard had an almost smooth looking coat as a 8-10 weeks old puppy and had no sign of beard. And some dogs who showed sign of beard as a puppy ended up with less beard than this dog. So you can never tell exactly, but I can more or less tell what kind of coat to expect. And also there is one kind of coat that would need regular grooming, like I would say every 5 or so months, good stripping. Otherwise it gets a bit fluffy. And there is that type of really tight short coat that doesn't need basically any kind of maintenance or or just a very light one. And in, within one breed, it can be a great variety of coat. Even we can end up with a totally smooth short hair. So that can also happen in the breed.
Okay. Yeah. So we get that in wire hairs as well. It's like we refer to them as slick coats. We do have DNA tests to be able to tell if you're going to produce that or not, if the dog carries the slick gene. Do you use any kind of testing like that in your breeding program?
Yeah, so the these DNA tests have become very fashionable lately, I believe. And I'm sure the laboratories are very happy about that. So yes, there is a DNA test for furnishing that is supposed to tell if a dog would produce short hair or not. But if you ask me, and with my 20 years of experience, this DNA test is not going to tell you if the coat quality is going to be good or not. So even if you take a dog who is not going to produce short hair, and I have more of this dog, these type of dogs, you can still end up with a puppy who probably genetically is not short hair, but wire hair, but you would probably find like two or three longer hair on the dog in total, and the dog totally looks like short hair. And you might even, I mean, you can end up also with this really fluffy and bad quality coat. So I think that in general, people are putting way too much emphasis on this coat genetic testing, and they don't realize that it's not going to tell you if the coat quality is good or not. There is still a great variety in coat, and this breed cannot allow such discrimination. I mean, it is way more important for a breed that has such a narrow gene pool to try to outcross and take into consideration way more important factors, just like working ability, temperament, health, and conformation. And I personally think that if I have a litter of eight, where I have, let's say, one or two puppies with totally smooth coat, and then six puppies with perfect coat, I'm very happy with that litter. And I wouldn't trade that litter to one where all the puppies have a wiry coat, but all of them have too much coat, one that needs a continuous grooming.
Absolutely.
So I am a lazy groomer, and I know that most of the hunters are like that. And I think there is nothing more annoying when you have to keep cleaning the dog's coat from all these thistles and everything that gets stuck in the coat because it's too long.
So let's talk about their natural ability in general. You know, if somebody gets this breed as the first time, what are some of the things that they can expect that are going to come very easy to train with the breed that are natural? And what are some of the things that they're going to really have to focus on training with them that is a little bit more difficult to come by?
Yeah. So me as a breeder find it very important that we breed from dogs who have good natural abilities. And those who are buying this breed, they have to be aware that just by buying this breed, they don't necessarily have one from good lines. So there can be a great variety, especially because unfortunately many breeders don't put big emphasis on the working side of the breed. And an NA test is just the very, very beginning of proving a dog's natural abilities. I would say even a dog with a maximum score NA doesn't necessarily mean that that dog is something special. For me, that is just the very, very basics. And I would like to see how a dog is behaving when you put pressure on the dog and you expect more from the dog. But I require my dogs, or that actually that's how I would describe this breed or expect from this breed, that they have a very strong retrieving ability. So the desire to retrieve, they have a soft mouth. They love the water, and you shouldn't have a hard time teaching the dog to retrieve. You shouldn't have a hard time or you shouldn't need to do force fetching to teach this dog to retrieve. So I would have to say that probably none of my dogs are taught with force fetch to retrieve, just by praising and playful. And then, of course, later on in training, I do transit into a certain relationship or behavior where they know that they have to do it, but it's not that type of force fetch that you would start from the very beginning and get, then go through it. And my dogs are reliably retrieving foxes and everything. Of course, it depends also on a good relationship with the owner, but a good bloodline should have a very good natural ability to retrieve. They also have a good ability to point, but I would like to emphasize here that this breed is a late maturing breed compared to the German pointing dogs. So in every way, except for the retrieving. So this breed is not going to range out far as a young dog. You actually, in your training, you have to make sure you are getting a good basic and a good connection or relationship with your puppy, and that you are boosting their confidence. So once you have a dog with good confidence, then this dog is going to do well. If you are taking away or suppressing the confidence of the dog, then this dog will never be as good as you would expect. And also, you don't want to take away their independence and their problem solving. So when I am starting with young puppies, I'm doing lots of playful exercises, expanding the distance they go out and search, always making sure that they are rewarded with a retrieve or with a find. I let them chase birds. I even let them chase birds for the very first hunting season. So I don't like to push them to be steady on birds from the beginning, because in my experience, that is going to just create sticky dogs. So if you start to make them woo from the very beginning, then they are not going to range out far enough. They are not going to chase or go for a retrieve far enough. You have to build up this breed smart. It's not difficult, but I don't recommend this breed for people who have very harsh training methods or who lose their temper very quick. This breed can only take a fair handling. So I can be really hard with my dogs or harsh, but I am always fair and they know what to expect. And it's also not good never to correct the dog. So I do believe that good training is correction and praisal, but you have to learn to praise your dog properly. So with a good way of praising, you can get this breed very far. If you are not able to praise, then you will not succeed as well as you would like to. The pointing part, I know that in America, they like to start training the pointing from a very young age. Now, if you have this breed, you might have a dog who is starting pointing early, but don't be surprised if your puppy is still not showing any signs of pointing at 6, 7, 8 months. Most of my dogs actually started pointing at, let's say, 10 months, but some of them even later. And after that, they became really good dogs. So it's something just you have to be aware of, that even if your 6 months old puppy is not showing any signs of pointing, it's not the end of the world. You can still find some that are going to start pointing sooner. And I wouldn't say those are going to be any better dogs than the ones who are not pointing at such a young age. Actually, my very best dogs started pointing much later. So that's also something you have to take into consideration or keep in mind when you are training your wirehaired Vizsla.
Mm-hmm. Is that one, like when you're sending puppies home with new owners, I'm assuming like what you just talked there about expecting the pointing to come later on, are there any other very specific tips that you're giving to your new owners when you're sending those puppies home?
I'm just thinking of, I do have a list of hints what to do with the puppies, but I might need to expand it. So I would never recommend to use an e-collar on this breed for training, even if you use it on a low level. My experience is that they don't take it well. It's just giving them too much pressure, and they don't do well at a young age with the such a pressure. I do use e-collar for my trained dogs for reinforcement and safety when we are hunting, but not to train them. In my experience, it's just way, you are going to get a better result if you are training without the e-collar, just with appraisal and building up confidence and not too much obedience in the beginning. With that, I mean, you can be consequent and expect obedience at home. So in the everyday life, it's okay to teach the dog to sit and wait and things like that, but not too much obedience in the field out with the birds. So no woo and no big expectation. With my young dogs, I just let them have fun, find, chase, go after birds, chase the birds in the very first year. Actually, some of them by 9-10 months, they start to just mature so big that they really start to do what I would like them to do. Some need a bit more time. It really also depends when the puppy was born and what kind of exposure you can give for the puppy at what age. So for me, ideal if it's a spring puppy and by the hunting season, I can get them out, find birds, and they are, let's say, at least 7-8 months old, then they are really in that time frame when they can learn a lot and get and improve a lot. Okay. With the younger puppy who was born in autumn, it's just too early to do something useful in the hunting season. So it has to be another hunting season, the next one, when it can really get that kind of experience. So those dogs might be finished much later. Let me tell that I would take out 4-5 months old puppies already hunting. And often these puppies, I just let them do whatever they want. I always take along a good working experienced dog, and I just let the puppy copy and, you know, imitate. And very often I see these puppies backing the other dog and even start to point just with the help of the other dog. But it's not something that I'm starting to practice and setting up a training scenario for pointing. It's just that I let them do that and make it happen and let them watch and do. And I had young 5 months old puppies doing perfect job on pointing, retrieving and everything. But we are very fortunate in our hunting culture that we have several hunts when there are pheasants that were pen-raised pheasants that are released in an area before the hunt. So the young dogs get a lot of exposure to birds. And this is something that you can't make up with just planting birds and using launchers. That is a totally different experiment for a young dog.
At what age will you start doing broke dog, finished dog work with them? You know, like training to run a utility test?
So it's actually quite funny because I say that I wouldn't push the dogs too far in the beginning, yet I have one-year-old dogs doing the HZP or ÖTV, which is about the UT level. So what happens with this breed is that once they get to that age where they are confident and they start to range and they start to point and they start doing everything they should, then it's really quick when you get to Z, from A to Z. So it's just you have to wait for that very good moment when you start to put more pressure and work into the dog. And then I can fix the dog then in 2 weeks. So I have young dogs that I let them chase birds all hunting season. And then in the spring, I started training them and I could stop them on a bird in 2 days. So the breed itself has a very high willingness to please and cooperation. And of course, you also need that kind of good relationship with the dog, that the dog has respect and he wants to work for you and he wants to be good. and then it's really easy to finish the dog. So I would say a 1.5 years old dog could easily get to a UT level.
Okay. But
at least my dogs in my training. So
right.
It also right. takes a handler, a trainer, and the dog.
Mm-hmm. What does the duck search look like for the breed? Is that generally something that you need to spend a good amount training the right way for them to do that duck search, or that do they just go out there and rip it up?
So let me start with the fact that our duck search, so in the Hungarian testing system, or also the German, the HZP, the duck search is very different from the duck search in the UT. So the duck search, what we have is there is a duck, a winged duck that is thrown on the water in a big water area where there is cover as well, and they let the duck swim away out of sight, and then they call the handler and the dog, and you have to guide the dog to the point where the duck was thrown on the water, and then have the dog follow the scent of the duck. And then once he finds the duck, he has to chase the duck out of the cover and chase it until the duck gets into a good position where the duck can be shot, and then the dog has to retrieve it. So it is, and the dog overall has 15 minutes to do that. If a dog is showing a good ability to track the duck on the water, so it's, you can see that it's really following that same track that the duck was making, but the duck is never found because of whatever reason. We know that living animals can behave however they want. Then you can still get maximum score. But if a dog is not willing to chase the duck, or chases the duck but then gives up after a while, then it's likely going to be disqualified. So our duck search is more about the finding and not mm-hmm. the fact how much time they spent out searching. So the way we build up this is, first you want to have a dog that is very happy to chase ducks, and that is the key factor here. So you build up the confidence of a young dog to chase and not to be afraid of the gunshot when the duck is shot in front of the dog. I like to start training this with a live pigeon, also clip the wing out. It's just more cheap than the duck and doesn't swim so far in the beginning. So once you have a dog who is eager to and actually the pigeon can still flap with the wings on the water surface, so can swim out far and teach the dog not to be afraid of the clapping wing. And probably with the German breed, you would never have to think about this issue. But with other pointing dog breeds, you might have the issue of the dog getting scared of the flapping wing. So that's how I start. Actually, I start having the dog catch a wing, the pigeon, on the ground and then on the water and then transit into a duck. And I prefer training the dog first in smaller water where it gets the confidence and it learns to chase the duck for a long time, where I can be sure the duck can be shot in the end from any position. And then once you have a dog who is very motivated about the duck, then I teach the dog to follow the scent. Basically, it's going to come then by nature. But when I was training my two dogs for the UT, so again, I had to teach them something that was very new for them, because until then, the duck search for them had a very different meaning. I believe in the UT, the duck search is about having the dog go far out and search there. And I could do that by placing several dummies or birds on the other side of the lake and keep the dog sending back. Once he has found one, then keep it sending back for a second and the third. So the dog always has this impression that there can be always another one out there or a third one out there. And I find this a very important part in training, because I see the mistake, or saw the mistake that some of the people made at this another chapter where I was testing in New Jersey, and also some people were training with me, and I didn't want to be too nosy or say anything because they didn't ask my opinion. But when I saw them that they just place out one bird, I thought to myself that this is not the very smart. If the dog finds the bird too quick, you won't be able to send the dog back for another. And actually, with both of my dogs, what happened is that they found the birds in a very short time. So I did have to send them back, and they had no problem going back, just because we trained for that, that they can be sent back for a second, for a third, and they will be willing to go out.
Great. Yeah, it's important during training that they're learning every time they go out, they're getting a reward. So
exactly. And that you as a trainer think about all the scenario and get your dog prepared for all the scenario.
Right. Yep. What about health considerations? So, you know, we talked about if people are interested in the breed to look for some proven field ability there. Definitely you've proven that, built that in your kennel. I think you are probably the most well-known, reputable breeder that I've found so far in the breed.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's true.
Yeah. And the form and function, you know, so the characteristics, the importance of coat and temperament. But what about health concerns? What are some of the issues in the breed that are, if people are looking for a breeder, they need to make sure that that breeder is testing for?
So I would lie if I would say that this breed does not have any health issues, and some of them can be tested, some of them cannot. And still the fact that the parents are healthy are not going to guarantee 100% that the puppies are going to be healthy. I would say hip dysplasia is one of those concerns, but I think in the past 20 years, this has improved a lot. So the in general, it's a less and less problem. And also what is good news is that even dogs who don't have a passing hip score, so with OFA, they wouldn't be good enough for breeding. It is actually very rare that you will end up with a dog who physically have problems. At least that is what my experience is. I have seen and hunted together with several short hairs and also wire-haired Vizslas who officially did not have a good hip score for breeding, but they were hunting in very difficult ground in plow fields and all kind of ground till the very old age, let's say 11, 12 years without any issue. So in general, they rarely have physical symptoms, but I would expect every breeder to test for the hip dysplasia. And we also, or I also test for elbows and eye problems, but this is not really a real problem in the breed. So elbow dysplasia and eye problems are not not happening often. And actually it is not even expected by the Hungarian parent club to be tested. There is another health test, it's called the HUU. It's a urinary stone formation a dog can be prone to. So if you test the dogs, several might end up affected or carrier, but in reality, the affected ones, well, it means they can have this kind of problem, but they don't necessarily have. They might be prone to this problem. And in reality, very, very few of them end up having any real issues. And also, this is something that can be cured or even avoided with nutrition. On one hand, it's a good thing that you can test for this, but I actually emphasize or express my opinion in many forums, even though I test my dogs, and I make sure that they have a good result, and I would only breed with that. But if you ask me in person, I say that this breed has still a too narrow gene pool, and it, in the long run, it is not going to be good for the breed that nowadays only HUU clear studs are used, or most of the people are focusing so much on the HUU that this seems to be more important than all the other factors regarding the dog. Just narrowing down the number of dogs that are used as studs, and it's not good for the breed.
With the rise in popularity over the breed, do you have any concerns in the direction that it's going right now?
I'm hoping it will never get there where the short hair Vizsla, which really has its negative, or it really has a negative effect with the on the. So the short-haired Vizsla is so popular that it's really hard to find a good dog. At least in Europe, it's so diluted, and because it's so easy to sell them, and most people are just looking for pets, and then many breeders are just not motivated to breed good dogs because most of their buyers are just pet owners. And unfortunately, I do see this coming in this breed in certain countries. America is one of those. England is actually the worst, I would say, especially in breeding ethics. So yes, I am concerned about the breed. And that's why I try to keep being so active and try to promote the working side of this breed and try to get more hunters have the breed. And also when I'm selling dogs with breeding rights, I am trying to be very strict about how you can breed with the dog, and I do require the owners to test their dogs at least on an NA level to prove the quality of their dog. But I think that an NA level is just so low, and even several people are struggling to do that. And unfortunately, there had been more cases when they breached the contract, and there is not much I can do from the other side of the world or from another country. I'm trying my best, and I just hope that if there are still more and more people who are working dog people or hunting dog people are getting involved in this breed, then we are always going to have that core who will appreciate the abilities of the breed. But yeah, what I see a problem is that Facebook, I do call it fake book, is just creating a lot of unreal picture of breeders, and people buy that lie, what they see there. You know, that if somebody is taking a picture of a dog and the bird next to it, or puppy is tearing a bird into pieces, then they think that this breeder is one that is working, really working the dogs, and people just don't spend more time to get a real insight of that breeder. So you know, nowadays dogs are very easily sold all over the world just by cute pictures, and this is good for those who are producing the puppies, but not good for the breed in general, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How difficult is it for someone in the U.S. to import a puppy from you?
I think it's nothing more difficult than having a puppy from the other side of the USA. Actually, the flying part is even more easy because the European airlines who are flying dogs are more reliable, have a better reputation in shipping dogs than within the USA, at least what I've heard so far. I always try to send out my puppies with the puppy nanny. I'm not saying it always works out, but I do try to make it happen that way. Otherwise, I send them with a cargo company.
Okay.
So you do have to hire a cargo company. You can't just go to the airline and then send the dog that way, because it needs to be custom cleared, and you know it's going in between two countries versus when you are sending in within the US, it doesn't have to have that many paperwork involved. But the puppy can travel with 10 weeks, so not so late. It doesn't have to be quarantined or anything, so it's not such a difficult thing. And in my experience, the puppies take the flight easy. So apart from probably a little diarrhea or stress related, a bit suppressed immune system or something like that, nothing else happens to the puppy.
Mm-hmm. What about you personally as a breeder? You had mentioned that you want the puppies tested in at least natural ability when you send them here to their new homes. Do you require anything else when people that show interest in getting a puppy?
So I do require anyone who wants to breed that they do the health test, that they do at least a NAFDA NA. And because in the NAFDA NA, they do evaluate the teeth, the bite, and the coat. If that everything is found there okay, then I'm fine with that. Otherwise, if they are just going for a AKC Junior Hunter title, I do require them to go at least to 2 or 3 shows. I don't require them to give the dogs to handlers, but I do want 2 or 3 different judges evaluate the dog and not to disqualify the dog. So not to have any disqualifying fault. And that should be proven by at least 2 or 3 confirmation judges. Unfortunately, that is the most I can ask for. I know that it's very difficult in the US to achieve a champion title in the show ring, because the system is different, and you can have the best dog in the world, but if you don't have enough competition, you are never going to get anywhere with that. Mm-hmm. So I understand the system and I don't require anything more, but if anyone wants to breed, I do expect them to have the basic knowledge about the breed, what they are bred for, to attend some kind of working event and meet Gundog people and understand what we would expect from this breed or from hunting dog breeds in general.
And you had mentioned earlier, it's hard for you to have people uphold to your agreement. And but even if you were here in the US, Sophie, you'd still have that same difficulty.
Yeah, maybe. Not the USA, the worst part. You wouldn't believe, but it's England who is the worst part.
Okay.
It is just really disappointing and unbelievable what is going on there.
Sure.
Most of the people are producing puppies and are not don't have any intention of producing good dogs. Mm-hmm. Also, the puppy prices are so high there that unfortunately a lot of people, and that is true with any breed, not just the wire-haired Vizsla, but the wire-haired Vizsla is getting so popular there that it's getting there very intense. But they are saying that they are not going to breed the dog, and then you just end up seeing puppies advertised from that dog, and there is not much you can do, and it's just very disappointing.
It is, absolutely. For 13 years, we've had agreements and contracts and that uphold to say, you know, people can't breed a dog from us unless they have the health clearances, an advanced field title, and a show title. And we just had some people breed a female that failed her natural ability test, but they felt she should be bred from because she's a show champion. yeah. And then they bred her to a male that also failed his natural ability test. But yeah. And then AKC, you know, that's what's unfortunate. You know, for breeders, we try so hard to uphold. It's not only a reputation, it's proving dogs for a reason, exactly. For a purpose. These are working dogs. I could have cared less if that show title was on it, but do something exactly. In the field.
What they don't understand is that even from the very best combinations, there can be dogs coming out that are just not good enough for breeding. So sure. Just having a pedigree with a certain bloodline doesn't entitle you to breed from that. You really have to prove that that dog is good enough for breeding. And NA is such a low level test that we require. That's just the very minimum. Actually, in Hungary, at least we are fortunate in that you cannot even breed from a dog that doesn't have an NA and a confirmation test and the health clearance. So at least that is reinforced. And our NA is a little bit more complicated than the NAVDA NA, because we have a retrieve as well. So the dog mm-hmm. has to retrieve a fur and a feather game from land, and also a duck from water. A dead duck has to be retrieved twice from water. First, you just throw in the duck and the dog retrieves it. So they see if the dog is willing to swim and retrieve from water. And the second time when the dog goes in for the duck, they shoot. So they are testing the nerves there. And believe it or not, it's quite a difficult part, because many dogs who take the gunshot on the field might not take it on the water because it's more unstable for them. I mean, you know, their feet are not on the ground. So there are dogs who fail on the water part because of the shooting. Mm-hmm. So at least in Hungary, you cannot breed from a dog who hasn't fulfilled this. But unfortunately, all over the most other part of the world, there is no requirement for breeding. There are some countries like Slovakia, Czech Republic, and Germany and Austria who also have a requirement for breeding, and that is good. I don't have to fight with those people. But in other countries where you can just breed from anything that has a pedigree, I really want to make sure that my 20 years or over 20 years of hard working is not put in the wrong direction by just certain people who are just trying to make use of the Zöldmáli name and not putting any effort in proving that their dog is good enough for breeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely get that. And it's disappointing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If there was ever another breed to add to your pack, what would that be?
Well, I actually have a wire-haired mini dachshunds.
Okay.
Not pointing dogs, but they sure. are really, really fun to have. They're clowns. They make you very, I mean, they give a lot of joy and entertaining us all the time. Actually, I did have twice a Slovak, the wire-haired Slovakian pointing dog.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I won it on a competition in Slovakia, a puppy.
Wow.
They actually wanted me to have that dog because the Slovakians were expecting me to bring up that breed to such high level as I did with the Hungarian wire-haired Vizsla. So they were giving me this dog in hope I will do a lot with that dog. That dog was a very good dog in its breed. And I did achieve a few things, but I decided I want to sell her because it was just too much for me. The temperament of the breed was just too much for my pack. So I like the quiet, the calm, and balance the pack. And this dog was always the loudest, the most nervous, and quite aggressive. I mean, that was mm-hmm. really a sharp dog. But when I took the dogs out for walking and my dachshund was running, and then the Slovak just grabbed the dachshund and shook it. Well, luckily the dachshund didn't end up with any real problem, but then that was the moment I decided, okay, this is too much, because I knew that, I mean, you know, so it's a cross of the Weimaraner and the Poodle Pointer and the Chesky Fusek and the Drathar. So there are quite tough breeds in that. And yeah. I could see that this dog is really tough. And sometimes she just lost her mind. And also when I was training with other dogs, she was just so jealous and impatient that she was continuously screaming in the car. And you know, when you have calm dogs and, you know, it can be that way, then you don't want to put up with this kind of dog for in the long run. So I decided to sell her. And then unfortunately, she was poisoned a few days before she was picked up by the new owner. So that was a very sad ending. No. And then I decided that, you know, I'm done with that breed. But then some other, so when the Slovakian breeders heard that this dog of mine died, then several of them contacted me and they said they're going to give me another puppy for free.
I'm sure.
No, thank you. I was just done with the breed. But then one time, a friend of mine who was a judge in Slovakia, after we were on a competition in Slovakia, he told me, oh, come with me, I'll show you something. And then he took me to this litter of puppies and they were so cute. And, you know, when he told me, yeah, pick yours, it was like, you know, like a childhood dream when I could pick my puppy. And of course, then I ended up getting home with another Slovak. And she was also a good dog, very similar to the other one in every way. So when she was 10 months old, I decided that I don't need this dog because it's just too much energy and problem in the kennel. So actually, I ended up selling her to America and to a breeder who was already breeding this breed. And he's told me that he never had such a good dog before, so I should send another one if I have another one coming up. I told him, no, it's not going to happen again. That was enough. But it was funny that he was so pleased with the dog.
Sure.
And then, you know, it always depends. I mean, it's just a point of view. When you have other dogs sure. who keep screaming, then probably you don't realize this is a problem. But when you have yeah. dogs who are calm and quiet, then a dog who keeps screaming and testing you all the time. For example, this puppy, I took her running with the other dogs and she had a big problem with recall, something I never thought I won't be able to fix without an e-collar. I actually had to put an e-collar on the 6 months old puppy because I couldn't get her come to me even after running 14 kilometers with them. And then she was circling around the car and didn't want to get in. So she was quite a handful. After putting the collar on, she then had the better hearing. So, you know, but 6 months old puppy, this is not something I was used to with my breed. But again, it's just a point of view. So when you are used to training dogs with e-collar, then it's just another dog who needs an e-collar.
Mm-hmm. Well, Zofie, and I'd like to do another future episode with you at some point and get more into some of your training techniques and what you're doing, because I can relate to a lot of your methods, especially with how I work my Broncos. They sound kind of similar that way. We're just very little to no pressure.
Yeah.
Reading them properly, knowing that they need the rewards, positive stuff. So yeah, we'll have to do that in a future episode. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be fun. Kudos to you for all of your achievements. I mean, you've definitely made a name for yourself and your kennel worldwide, and extremely well-deserved, and you're producing awesome dogs. So
thank you.
I've had the opportunity to see a couple of them, and really impressive, really good-looking dogs, and I hope to get the opportunity to train or maybe even own one day, spend more time with them for sure.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here and speak here. It's been a pleasure.
It has. So can you tell us how we can find out more about you and your dogs, connect with you on social media?
Yeah, so I have a Zöld Mali Wirehaired Vizsla page, and also my profile under my name, Zsófia Micek. And I also have a website, which is www.zeldmali.com. So there you find more information about us and our dogs. And I'm not very good in updating my website, but sometimes it happens. So don't try to look up our recent results in competition and things like that, because it's always so much achievement that I'm pretty lazy updating it, but at least you can get to know my dogs there.
That's fantastic. And do you keep it updated with when you have a litter of puppies?
No, I'm very okay. bad in that.
do you have a waiting list, or what does that typically look like?
So usually, because I have a waiting list for puppies, when the puppies are born, I'm not so motivated anymore to put it up on the website. And before that, I just seem to be too busy. But now I always have it on my to-do list. So I'm now planning on doing an announcement for my upcoming litter, but I'm not very good in this. So it's just easier if people ask privately and then I tell them. But sometimes I have a rare moment and then I do it. It's just that it's not always that accurate.
In that rare moment, it might happen.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much for asking. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. It was so much fun to dive deep into the wire-haired Vizsla breed with Zofia. Such a cool breed, right? It's no surprise they continue to grow in popularity. It's not easy to maintain form and function in a breeding program, especially at the level that Zofia is consistently doing with dogs that are able to attain advanced field titles. We should all be striving for the same in our breeding programs. Be sure to check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast for all your bird, dog, and hunting needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283. If you're loving this podcast and want to support it, get additional discounts and content, go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to sign up. And please support the conservation organizations of the birds that you're chasing after this season and the public lands in which you hunt.